Hello and welcome to episode 550 of Contending at the Water Cooler. I am your host, Clarence Moy, and I am joined once again by the other two M's. So M's, welcome back, Megan. Let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Megan, let's start with you.
Joey, you can't do that.
No, Joey, come on.
I love it. Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin. You can find me everywhere at Hey Dude Meg, pretty much.
Why?
Letterboxd.
Why does Robbie look like he's getting ready to Michael Jackson Whitaker?
Oh my God! That's the first one that I found that fit the frame. You freaking whore.
Okay, Joey.
These are two consenting adults. Hi, my name is Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
I'm out. Actually, I realize who it looks like. It looks like you and your husband.
That's fine.
Yeah, Whitaker's face doesn't look consenting. I don't know.
Well, I think he looks very adoring at him.
He's blushing because he loves him so much.
Hmm. Yes.
All right. And again,
I can find a more graphic picture if you want.
No, that's okay. That's totally fine. This is I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. The Pitt Twitter is the weirdest thing. I just all of the people who go down that path and have gotten me like second guessing myself. It was like, wait, Robbie was with a woman, right? Like, I'm so confused all of a sudden.
I think it's because they're we don't go home with them, you know, we only stay in the pit. Yeah. So people have all of these like that's I've seen
there
this.
We go. Yeah.
People have all of this like pent up like I gotta see something and they're not gonna see it. This isn't Grey's Anatomy or even the old ER at the end, which I watched like stuff like shootouts and stuff at the end of ER is just like off its rocker at the end.
Much like Grey's Anatomy, but Grey's Anatomy continues yet.
Yeah.
That show will never die.
That show will never die. That show will absolutely never die. All right. Welcome to our podcast this week. We are obviously talking about season two of The Pitt. What are our thoughts? What are our likes? What are our dislikes? And how far will The Pitt go on this year's Emmy race? We'll probably take a little bit of a look at the drama series race and kind of figure out what if anything can compete against this, what we consider a pretty substantial juggernaut here. And then, of course, we'll close with a flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. So, Megan, you have been doing a lot of interviewing thus far. You've been really diving deeply into The Pitt season two. You've seen the whole season. What did you think so far?
I thought it was great. I thought it was a great continuation of season one. I know some people were like bitching about it online that nothing happens. I'm like, there's so much that happens. You can't expect like Pitt Fest in season one was like a crazy thing that happened. And there are other crazy things that happened to this day, but in this second day that we see in the lives of the Pitt people. But I thought it was great. I thought it was very, it really, I think that the theme of the second season is that our heroes are human. And that I think it's a very disturbing season in some way because you're seeing people make mistakes and seeing like not like mistakes that not like they're going to be sued about, but just like it's showing like that guy with, well, Joey hasn't watched, is Joey finished it?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just making sure. Like Ogilvy's patient season, like if that patient would have told him something, I think that would have helped or something. It was like a human error, but on both sides type of thing. And I think that that's terrifying. And I thought that like seeing Dr. Mohan spinning out basically or crashing out and it just, and even Dr. Robbie, really, I just think that that was the theme for this season is that like our heroes are human. And I thought that it was really beautifully depicted.
So, Joey, you had not caught up to the end of the season until just recently. So what did you think?
I'm a little surprised that people were so, like, at least at the beginning, that they said that season two, like, wasn't as good as season one, where I just feel like it's a real extension of the quality of season one. I even felt in some ways that, because I was watching it with Jason, that I kept, like, badgering him. I was like, we gotta finish the show. Like, I'm chomping at the bit to finish the season. And I don't know if maybe some people are just expecting those, like, sort of mini arcs from season one, like Pit Fest or
the,
you know,
Samantha
the,
Sloyan and her son.
Yeah. Or yeah. That, or like the ambulance chase that everyone was sort of checking in every week with until it concluded. I read somewhere, I can't remember when or where they said that season two is really a focus on quality of care between a doctor and their patient. And if that, I would say, if that is like the thesis of what the season as a whole is trying to achieve, I think it really knocked it out of the park, in my opinion. In terms of, you know, each of these amazing characters, these doctors, I think you really can automatically think of at least one patient for each doctor that maybe necessarily it doesn't, like, it's not necessarily about saving their life, but they have a sort of really impactful interaction with them, whether it be like Dr. Mohan and the guy who refuses treatment for the cost of it that really has an effect on her, or the sexual assault that Dana takes care of. She takes her time to do it. It's all really about like quality of care. I think, and I don't know how people are second guessing the show. Like, I just don't. Sorry.
No, I agree. I'm right there with both of you. I think it's the, for my money, it's the best show on television. And it's not even close. Like, it's so, the thing that I love about this show the most is the authenticity behind it. It doesn't play the Grey's Anatomy game of keeping characters in a scenario for way too long. I mean, it, you know, people come in and out, they leave before you expect them to, you know, they follow I think they're very careful about following a traditional real life day within an ER room. And so, you know, you're going to get patients wheeled in and out. You're going to get, you know, people that you're interested in. They may not stay around for a long time, because in a real ER world, they don't stay around for a long time. But then you get someone like the, I don't remember her name, but the mother who dies of cancer in.
Yeah.
And that, you know, was just heartbreaking to watch, because her family was there all the time. And then you've got, you know, the impact of that on the staff, and how you learn about them as characters through all of these minute, you know, micro interactions. It's just operating on such a different level. And I'm mystified by a lot of the online discourse, and admittedly online hate, that are against actors in the show or characters in the show or just choices that the show have made. I don't understand it. I really don't.
New picture.
I'm just going to rotate them.
I don't either, because I remember seeing in like the first episode, people were upset. Nobody's mentioned Collins. I'm like, well, like, she was mentioned eventually, yeah, but did. You could. Yeah. You can't, like, this is like what, 13 months later, 18 months later, after the Pit Fest, nobody's going to be talking about her if she has left. If she's
also at 7 a.m.
Right. Yeah. Why? Yeah.
And it is a place of business. I mean, these people love each other because of the bonds that they form through their trauma and the trauma that they engage in. But it is a place of business. They're not going to miss them like they would in a traditional dramatic, you know, yeah. hospital setting or a sitcom or something like that. They're not going to, it would be inauthentic to all of a sudden say, oh, gee, I wonder where she is, or I'm hope she's so happy with her baby, and, right. you know, or have a Zoom call with her. You know, it just wouldn't, right. that's not the first thing that's on their mind.
Right. And that's why I thought people, then they would have been upset if they had done that. You know, you just can't win. But yeah, I think this season is great. I think, the additions, like the character of Emma was a nice addition. Joy and Ogilvy, they were really interesting characters. I love the fact that Joy just leaves at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. She's just like, I'm out of here. And like, I think she's probably the healthiest of all of them. And she, I mean, granted, she hasn't really started yet, but has the healthiest mindset that like, no, this is, you know, my shift is over. I've got to go.
She's prioritizing mental, her yeah. personal mm-hmm. mental health over,
yeah.
you know, saving yeah. people. And you see that scenario played out, the opposite of which, you know, clearly in the most obvious scenario of that is Dr. Robbie, who has such a twisted relationship with the ER where he can't live without it, but he also can't stand it. And so, you know, the whole through the season, you see him, you know, essentially planning to kill himself.
Yes. My dad called that right away when we were watching. He's like, I think he's going to kill himself.
I did when he, the first time that I got an inkling of it was when he was arranging for Whitaker to house sit for him. And he said, hey, and if I don't come back, you've got a nice house. And I'm like, oh, he wants to kill himself. That was like,
this isn't Pitch Black dark at all.
Can I ask you two questions? One, do you think he goes on the motorcycle trip? Two, or do you think, does he adopt baby Jane Doe? Does he adopt baby Jane Doe temporarily as a foster parent?
Oh, God.
That's what I thought they were hinting at.
Okay. Joey, you want to answer?
I don't think he should adopt baby Jane Doe because he's gone 15 hours a day. Like, where... Are you going to pay for childcare?
Taking a sabbatical.
Well, that's true.
Should and I mean, does are different questions or different answers.
That's true.
I would say no, he doesn't adopt the baby because I feel like he doesn't want to bring his crap onto a child. I think he's probably self-loathing enough to avoid that. Although I think he, at the end of the season, which had me in tears when, you know, he realized that that was a healing moment for him. Mm-hmm. I do think he goes on the road trip though.
I think he takes the baby home. They keep saying that the whole time. We need somebody to watch the baby tonight. We need someone to watch the baby tonight. I thought that's what they were implying, that he was going to be the one to take the baby home. And he even says at the end that he thought he would have kids by now stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where season 3 picks up. I heard it's not that much after season 2. I also kind of hope that it's the winter because I would love to see.
I do too. I want to hear stuff about chairs and parking spots. I was actually going to ask you too, like, what would you guys like? We can save this for the end, but I feel like there are a lot of people that want to see a winter pit season.
Yes.
But I, even if he does take baby Jane Doe home, I do feel like that would be, a sentimental thing that I don't know if I would even necessarily say that the pit purposely avoids, because I feel like the pit lives very much because of the nature of the structure of the show and the nature of the setting. You have to live like sort of in the immediate present. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like that would almost be un-Pitt-like for them to be like, well, he took it home and he's healed. But not healed, but you know what I mean?
I agree. I'm not completely saying that he's gonna like maybe necessarily adopt permanently, but like even to like
take her home for a week.
That baby's going home with him that night because they need somebody. I know that that baby was going home with him. That's my
And
thought.
also, aren't all the residents, aren't they all like Robbie's children? Unfortunately.
Yeah.
They it's absolutely like, are.
The fifth woman in Sex and the City was New York City.
So you're saying the child he never had.
The child. Yes, exactly.
Let's talk about Dana. Dana.
Rip, pleasure.
Yes. Baby Jane Doe.
Baby Jane Doe.
Yeah. The scene where she does the rape kit, the rape analysis, you know, taking that poor woman through the experience and being so kind and so gentle and being so brave and not overly sentimental with her, or not overly, know, oh, you poor thing, but she's just a very matter of fact. But then that girl needs a break. She pops out, and then her, and this is early in the season, but her whole face just crumbles. Yeah. Such a powerful moment. Another Emmy right there for Catherine Lanasa.
Yeah, I think so too. I do.
Do you think she should campaign and lead actress?
Yeah, I do.
I kind of do too.
Do you think
I kind of think that Robbie's like the real lead of the show. So I mean, it would make sense.
She has a lot of scenes. They seem to be co-leads this season.
But she's like bulked up a lot in the in this.
Yeah. Well, if he's the father of the ER, she's the mother.
Yeah. Is she officially campaigning as lead or supporting still, or is she?
I don't think they've announced it yet.
I think they were taught. They were. I heard. I thought I heard something that said that she was considering.
Okay. I mean, I think she should too because of all of the supporting work from.
Yeah.
Like Taylor Dreerden and, or is it Deirdre Dreerden? Dreerden. Taylor Dreerden and Issa Briones, Supriya Ganesh. I feel like I'm missing somebody else. Oh, Sepeda Mofi. She's so good. So they would be smart to do that, to kind of like,
I agree.
Whereas I feel like for supporting Patrick Ball, I don't know who else would be, because I think that Sean Hattisey's going to go guest again. And I think he'll win because he's so good. But I don't know if there are any other supporting. Oh, Whitaker. Yeah, of course. Those two. So it would be Garen Howell and Patrick Ball would be the two. I mean, that's what I think.
I do think Patrick Ball gets in this year after being omitted from season one. But I think enough people catch up to it and enough people see him and understand who he is, and he's on Broadway now in Becky Shaw. I think he definitely gets nominated.
I felt like people online were saying the moment where he is like holding a stretcher and his back hurts and he like makes a flinch or something, they're like, here comes your Emmy, Patrick Ball. These are probably the same people who said that what's his name from Wicked when he's the Tin Man, come get your Oscar.
Yeah, like, come get your Oscar. I was like, shut the fuck up. I think that Patrick Ball getting in, because I thought he was really a sort of a strong presence in season one, too, sort of antagonistic, you know, guy to Robbie in season one. I feel like season two is a really big payoff, especially if you think about how those two men are intertwined, like father son adversary type thing. And I gotta say, at the very end, whenever, like, they don't really have, you know, they don't have a huge talk at the end of season two, but you know, where they have to interact with each other and they sort of get to a nicer place at the end of season two, I got emotional watching that. And also, if you think on a, like, a basic level, I mean, it's a story of his characters are recovering addicts. I mean, that's sort of catnip for actors, so
why yeah. not?
Well, I think the only reason Patrick Ball didn't get in for first season was because of the gluttony of performances from White Lotus and Severance that year. Yeah. So you yeah. had three nominations for Severance, three nominations for White Lotus, and then the random Paradise nomination for James Marsden. So six of those are gone. So it's, you know, he stands a really good shot to get in there. Although I do see, like in some of the Gold Derby predictions, he's not ranked highly. So
I think a lot of people really need to. I think a lot of people in Gold Derby really need to think a lot more realistically with a lot of categories. I think it's a lot. I think a lot more people need to take a better look at how some of the Television Academy stuff works. I don't know.
Yes. And I take that back. He is ranked at, I haven't looked at it in a while, but right now he is number one in the combined okay, ranking. There against Sterling K. Brown for, that's actor, excuse me. Billy Crudup for Morning Show, Tom Pelfrey for Task, Jack Lowden, Slow Horses, Carlos Manuel Vesca for Pluribus, Coleman Domingo for Euphoria, and Garen Howell, The Pit.
You know, I love how last year I was really just like, oh my God, there are too many performances from Severance, blah, blah, blah. I was like, The Pit, give it to it, all of it. Let it have four or five slots. That's fine.
And you can, I do think
they're
going to
have... Supporting actors to be all women from The Pit, and I'd be fine with it.
Yeah. And it's three or four. I mean, depends on where Catherine Lanasa goes, but there could be a lot there. And but that's why I think The Pit's going to have a fantastic second season in terms of Emmy nominations.
I think so too. I think actually it could break records. I have a feeling. Because I'm also wondering for guest. Okay, who is the one that they just promoted for season three, the actress? Because I feel like she could be a guest actress nomination.
Aisha Harris?
Yes. I feel like she, I think she could get in.
She's not first on that list, though, because I think they're going to love Tal Anderson.
Oh, yes. She is definitely getting in, I think. Yes.
And that's Taylor Dearden's sister, Dr. King's sister.
Oh yeah. Oh, her. She's great.
And Brittany Allen plays the mother who dies of cancer.
I was wondering. I just realized I've interviewed Aisha Harris before. I forgot she was in Daisy Jones and the Six. She's great. She was in that too.
I would actually like to see I'm sorry, I'm going to pull up her name. The woman who, maybe because it's just a very Pittsburgh storyline, her name is, hold on, can't find it still. The woman who is dealing with some trauma from... Her name is Irina Dubova. She's the woman it's early on in the season who's dealing with hearing fireworks, thinking that it's gunshots because she almost...
Oh, that was almost, a really good...
Because that's like one episode.
Yes.
It's got like... I don't know. I just think I thought I was really taken with her as I was going through the season. So I kind of hope that she kind of gets it.
I mean, the thing that's so hard is that there's so many great characters, great actors. Like,
yeah.
Like on it, even that they introduced another new doctor this season. Like I actually do hope they do a spinoff with the Night Crew because I'd watch it.
I would love that. I'd watch the shit out of that.
Yeah, I would watch that too. But it's just like I love all of them, and you do get to know them throughout the show. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like the little miracle of the show is that we're not going home with them, but we know so much about them just through their work life, you know.
They should do a spinoff and they should call it the Nightcrawlers.
Yes. Yes.
And I mean, just because Abbott is such a fascinating character and Sean Hattersey is so great playing him, but he is like a profoundly screwed up individual. And no
Yeah.
one really seems to, I mean, people acknowledge it, but they just kind of like, oh, you're crazy because you're going for gunshots. And
he's like opposite of Robbie in so many ways. Like they're both fucked up, but like he's going to therapy. He's trying to deal with it. I mean, he was also the one in the first episode ever who was like on top of the roof. Yeah.
Jesus.
Such a great show. Such an amazing show. And I think destined to repeat drama series.
I 100% agree. I just don't see any competition. Pluribus is interesting, but uneven, I think I would say overall.
I still say that show is a little too, I don't think that is as all-encompassing in terms of who it reaches for wins wise as much as it is on like Twitter. Like it's, that is a show that, and I think I got put off, I think I said this before, I think it was at the Actor Awards, or I can't remember when they interviewed the lead actress, I'm blanking, Rhea Seehorn, when they were interviewing her, and they're like, well, tell me what the show's about, I don't understand. I don't think shows like that really always do that well. Like, just because it's, I don't know, fantasy. Game of Thrones is pretty like straightforward. I don't know.
No, sorry, I mean, it's you know, you look at The Pit, you say it's a day in the life of ER workers, and you know everything you need to know about that show.
I don't think necessarily like ambition is always the doesn't always win the day.
No, and we've seen that Apple struggles to take home a drama series Emmy. I mean, Severance season 2, the most acclaimed show of last year, couldn't beat The Pit after everyone online had proclaimed it to be the de facto winner, and it got all those acting nominations, and you know, it just couldn't do it.
Shit out of me.
Yeah. Oof.
And there's just not much else. I mean, Diplomat, Slow Horses, Paradise, Task, Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which I don't know that, I don't know about.
What
that
about
one.
The Gilded Age? I mean, I don't think it's there's nothing that's like a phenomenon that's equally a phenomenon.
Gilded Age isn't going to win. It may not even get nominated because for what Joey and I thought was its best season yet, it was completely ignored at all of the guilds.
Right.
So I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if they just weren't campaigning it, if they're not spending the money. I don't know. Stranger Things may be nominated just because it's the last season.
That came and went, I feel like.
Agreed. Agreed. And I can't see Euphoria getting in there after
not with
this
those
like
reviews.
Vitriolic reactions.
It sounds like, I have not watched it, and I was a Euphoria fan, but I've not watched the third season. But from what I've seen, it just looks like memes, like memes. The show, like,
I started it. I don't. I think on a certain level, I think the cast has outgrown the show.
Yes.
That's exactly the problem.
Why should we care? But that's just me.
I mean, I think Noah Wiley's winning another Emmy for Best Actor.
Sure.
Okay. Say they put Catherine Manassa in lead. Does she beat Rhea Seehorn? I think she does. Or Carrie Russell.
Carrie Russell, I think, is, you know, I don't know. After so many years of not winning or not even being nominated and then not winning for Better Call Saul, I think people are cool on Rhea Seehorn just because of her icy style. Yeah. I haven't seen the show, so I can't comment. I mean, she's a great actress. It's just, you know, she's just colder than I think people are comfortable with.
Here's my thing about Pluribus. Everybody I've talked to has said like, oh, it's like basically if the like worst person or the like unfriendliest person in the world is the last one left, you know. And I'm like, I don't get that she's that unfriendly. I don't get that she's that miserable. I mean, she's a, I don't know. I just feel like she's just a woman, you know, that's just maybe because she's a romance novelist who was tired from coming back from a tour. That's natural. I just, everybody I've talked to though has been like, just imagine the most miserable person who's the last one left on earth. And I'm like, no, that would be George Costanza. Like that would be, you know, like, she's not that miserable in the grand scheme of things. Roseanne Barr might be more. I'm like, there's got to be more miserable people. And I think that's such an interesting thing about her character, because I think her character is just like a real like person. And people are all saying, like a real woman. And they're all saying how miserable she is. And I'm just like, she's reacting the way. I mean, granted, her character does do something at the end that I'm like, this is stupid. But for the most part, I think she's kind of likable.
Yeah.
Isn't that the most, I mean, that's what Vince Gilligan said. Vince Gilligan says she's the most miserable person on earth.
I just don't get that vibe. And the fact that everybody has said that, I'm just not seeing it. Like, I'm not seeing it.
So I would probably say, okay, so if we're looking at drama actress, if we're going to go with that, I think, hold on, let me pull it. Kerri Russell, Rhea Seehorn, Zendaya,
yeah.
Kathy Bates. And then is it, I don't think it's Jennifer Aniston.
No.
I'm not sure if it's Carrie Coon. I think Kathleen Lanassa could go in there. I think it would be it between her and Kerri Russell, but I could easily see her. Like I don't think enough people are talking about the testaments. I don't think the industry thing is real.
No, it's not.
I don't unfortunately think it's Michelle Pfeiffer, even though she's great on The Madison. So I could see her getting in there. I don't know if that. Fine, yes, I'm going to actually say if she does. I think no matter kind of where what category you put her in, she could win.
Well, I think, yeah, I agree too, because if you put her in actress, I think, you know, as much as we know the Television Academy of late, ever since Schitt's Creek, they love a sweep. Like, you know, last year they did Spread the Wealth a little bit, but if there's not competition, I could see the pits sweeping every single category if they position people correctly. So it'll be fascinating to see. That's really the only interesting thing about this Emmy season to me is how far will this show go? Because again, there's not a lot of competition there. The nominations are going to be just bizarre. I can't wait to see that.
I think it'll break the Bear's record. Isn't the Bear have the most nominations ever?
What's the most nominations? Overall nominations.
Game of Thrones has it for 32.
Okay.
Damn.
And I don't think the Pit can compete with that because of the technical.
Right. Yeah. But I do think it'll beat the Bears. I know it's a comedy, but I think it'll beat the Bears record.
But the Bear, what record did they have? They had the most nominations for a first season.
Oh, I thought they had like the most. Was it the most? I thought they had like some sort of like
most nominations for a comedy in 1 year. The Bear had 23, but then didn't. Then it got tied last year with The Studio.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's the most wins in a single season by a comedy series, which is 11.
I can't believe Game of Thrones got 32 nominations and one
for a season
year?
No one likes.
That's insane. That's so fucking insane. I will say something that I want the Pit to win that it did not win last year was I feel like they upped the the gore and they upped the like prosthetics this year. Like, I feel like every episode I was going, bleh! I'm not even like a squeamish person when it comes to shit like that. But like, I think by the time that we got to the dick? Like the what?
The dick?
No, not that one. The one with the tug of war with the rope in the guy's hand. For some reason, that grossed me out.
Oh, right.
What dick?
There's so many things I've forgotten about. What?
Oh, dick? In like episode two?
Yeah, like the guy who has the erect penis who needs to come down.
Yeah, I was grossed out by the erect penis.
I don't know. You're probably grossed out by the vagina for sure in the first season. Right?
I'm not one of those like fair weather gay, like this? Vagina, ew. Jesus Christ. Welcome to 2003, Megan. There we go.
All right. What else about the pit and its Emmy chances?
I think it'll do some sort of weird record. I guess I'm wrong with the, I'm clearly wrong with the, but I think it's going to set some sort of record because I just see it being a complete phenomenon. It's a phenomenon. People have not stopped talking about it since the first season. Like, it's got that, like, sorry, I keep interrupting.
No, the thing I was going to say is like, and now we don't even have to wait until it gets nominated and wins so many Emmys for people to like turn on it. Because guess what? It turned on it in the middle.
Yeah, they
of
already turned
year.
On it.
We've already gotten through that. We're fine. We're fine.
Really?
Seeing some of the like reactions, like some of the like obscenely crazy things, he was like, well, clearly Noah Wiley is threatened by Patrick Ball's height. I was like, shut up. Shut up.
Or
you
the
guys are
whole
fucking insane.
The whole story that they were trying to manufacture around everybody, they all hated Noah Wiley because they didn't, because something about the going to the some event.
It was his walk of fame. They said nobody showed up for him or something.
Yeah. And
but
then there
all,
was
like, working.
And then Supriya didn't show up at the Paley Center, Paley event. And so they're all pissed at that. And then there is all kinds of conspiracy theories about why she's not in season three. And
right.
It's tough. It's tough to sit there and watch this stuff online.
Right. It's like, do they have nothing else to do? Some people were saying that we've lost all comprehension skills since like COVID. And yes. Like you couldn't handle ER. Again, you couldn't handle ER. Try watching a helicopter fall on a guy. The same helicopter that bought his hand, you know, like try watch. Oh, the irony.
All right, let's. With that, let's jump to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Joey, since you're so full of sunshine and happiness, why don't you go first?
I'm really excited for on Friday to see The Devil Wears Prada 2. I was very excited to see that the reviews seem really solid. I have tickets for Friday night. I'm super excited for it. I'm catching up on a bunch of TV. I have to finish Lord of the Flies, which I'm glad we're not a teenager anymore. Not even a teenager. They're children.
Which one do you identify with the most? Simon, Piggy, or who's the other one?
As a 42-year-old who's like really afraid of Gen Z, probably Piggy.
I was Simon. I was always felt like I was Simon. I loved Simon. Simon was come on, Simon was gay. Simon was gay.
Come you on. Heard it here first. Megan is declaring the sexuality of fictional characters.
I just remember Simon being cerebral and like on the beach. Didn't he like, I forget how he died on the beach, but I just remember being very like, I was like, oh, Simon. Simon, I would have wasted so much time on you as a girl and then been like, oh, you just want to be friends.
These are children, Megan.
I was reading it as a kid, is what I'm saying. When I was a teenager reading it, I was like, oh, I was, would have wasted so much time on you, Simon.
Oh, fuck. There's, yeah, I think it's just Devil Wears Prada. I'm trying to watch, like, every single fucking show that I can get my hands on. There's something that I just added to my list. I was like, I need something to... Oh, the show that I'm actually watching right now, because it is so... I don't say predictable, but it's a really sort of just... It's a half-hour show, is Running Point. I'm bouncing between Running Point and Nobody Wants This, and then I randomly throw in, I know how basic this is, but an episode of Friends, and then I start watching, like, I'll watch like a really dramatic episode of one thing, I'll watch like The Madison and watch Michelle Pfeiffer like fall to pieces, like, all right, what is Kate Hudson doing this week? So yeah, just bouncing around.
I need to catch on Running Point because I really like the ending of season one. Mm-hmm. Wait, you're on season two or are you in season one?
I just finished season one.
Okay, because I love what happens at the end of season one with the guy from, what's his name? Oh, he's so cute. I just think he's so cute. The guy from the Issa Rae.
Timothée Ellis.
Yes, I think he's so cute.
He's not cute, he's hot.
Okay, he's hot. Okay, so I have to find out what happens next. So don't tell me, even though I ruined another show for you.
Megan, what about you?
So, I am watching The Dark Wizard on HBO Max, which is a docuseries about Dean Potter, who was a free climber. It's really good. And so I'm trying to finish that. I like found myself being like, oh my God, I want to watch more. And then I'm also, I think that I'm going to write about this, but I think that the nonfiction docuseries categories are going to be very... like skyscraper heavy or like free climbing heavy, because we also have that Skyscraper Live special that I'm also
that is.
Would you say
what's Skyscraper?
It's Alex Honnold, who is like, who looked up to Dean Potter. He's actually in the Dark Wizard documentary in an interview, but he climbs the Taipei 101 tower. And it's, so I'm halfway through it. It takes him like 2 hours to do it, but I'm watching it on Netflix. And
it's 2 hours to do that?
Have you seen how big this building is?
No, it's a skyscraper. No, I'm just saying, like, that's fast.
Oh yeah, I know, but like, yeah,
it would take me 2 hours to go up the stairs on the inside of the building.
It is really impressive, and I do think going to get in because it's just what they do. I mean, just the fact that. Like, Netflix is taking a huge gamble having this man, and granted, this is what he does, but having this man climb this building, and they've got like little cameras jimmied up like next to him, and like people are in the building, like on the windows looking at him. It's insane. But I do feel like the docuseries and the nonfiction categories are going to be about free climbers this year. Like, I think that they're going to have them free climbing. So that's what I'm watching. I'm still trying to catch up on like lots of shows, trying to watch lots of things. I'm starting to read Be Careful Who You Love again, which is Diane Diamond's book about Michael Jackson. I'm back on it. I'm back in the true crime. I read this a few years ago, and it's a really good book. It's really fascinating. So I'm watching that or reading that. I don't know what I'm listening to. I don't know, podcast wise or anything. That's probably it. Oh, I am going to see Devil Wears Prada this weekend too with Mikey. Mikey, shout out to Mikey. Okay, that was all I had. There you go.
All right. I too am going to see Devil Wears Prada too. We're going to make it a sort of a family thing. So, looking forward to that. I've been rewatching. Preparing for Scary Movie 6 by rewatching Scary Movies, and they are not good. I don't know that I can make it through all 5 of them. Like, there are individual clips that I find very funny, but I remember I watched the first one this past weekend, and I remembered what I didn't like about it, which was there are moments of parody in there, but just doing the scenes over again doesn't make them funny. Like, it's just, you know, them recreating "I Know What You Did Last Summer." It doesn't make it funny that they're doing it all over again. There has to be some sort of perspective on it, and I think that they lack that. I don't even remember the second movie, but there's some things in there that I like. So we'll see how far I get. Ultimate Baking Championship. Joey, are you caught up on that?
No, I'm behind.
Yeah, me too. But it's a good show. I need to finish Margo's Got Money Troubles, which for me is the Michelle Pfeiffer show and Elle Fanning's breasts amply on display, except for when she's on OnlyFans, which I find a little bit disingenuous and dishonest about that particular character, because I feel like if that character were really on OnlyFans, she'd be doing porn.
I think in the book, though, she doesn't really do stuff like that. She does just, she's like, does weird things.
Like cosplay like, stuff.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember there being a lot, because I was like, who, what guys would buy this?
No, she doesn't. Yeah. Yeah. That's, she does cosplay stuff. She gets guys to send her dick pics, and she insults their dicks. And,
oh, yeah. Every woman's dream.
Doesn't she like, well, at least she considers to like just do videos of her like lactating and squirting milk. I saw a whole interview where Elle Fanning is like, "It's a prosthetic." Like, so glad these are the questions that Elle Fanning has to answer in interviews.
Yeah, because clearly Elle Fanning is not lactating herself.
Right.
But it's the Michelle Pfeiffer show. She hasn't been this good in years. And welcome back. Welcome back. I'm super here for it.
Well, I would argue that if you go to her house and she's just chilling in her kitchen, she is that good.
True.
Whatever she's doing, she's amazing in it.
I would watch the Madison. I would watch a Taylor Sheridan show just for her.
She got me to watch a Taylor Sheridan show. I haven't finished it, but she's worth it. So
I wonder if she'll get the Television Academy to watch a Taylor Sheridan show, because I don't think I've ever seen one.
Can you imagine if the Television Academy was collectively like, fine, we'll watch your show for a woman? I don't know why I'd take off my glasses for that, but there
it was the period at the end of the exclamation mark at the end of the sentence.
A sad.
And I'm continuing my rewatch of Parks and Recreation, which is bringing me great happiness. Such a perfect show. I love that show so much. Book-wise, Bonfire of the Vanities, and that Freda McFadden book that I can't remember the name of it, but I did start it.
Just put a bunch of words together. That's probably the title.
It's like, do you want to know a secret or this? The I don't know. We'll see. I'm also really interested. I've gotten the audiobook. I haven't started listening to it yet, but I'm really interested in Yesteryear, that book that Anne Hathaway has optioned.
Oh, yeah. Jason just bought that.
Yeah.
He was like, "Have you heard of this book?" We're in the book loft in Columbus. I was like, "What is it?" He started telling me, and I yelled, "That's the book that Anne Hathaway," like yelled at my head. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I'm very excited about that book. All right. Does it cover it?
Yeah.
All right. Let's get the hell out of here. But before we go, remember to catch up to the 1989 film War of the Roses, because next week we are marking another Michael Douglas movie off of Megan's list. And,
oh, yeah.
Yes. So we are watching War of the Roses and revisiting that after our dalliance with Basic Instinct, which if you haven't seen that or listened to that podcast or seen that podcast, you should go and check it out. All right. So we are the 3 M's contending co-founders, Megan McLaughlin, Joey Moser, and me, Clarence Moy. Thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you find us. Click like and subscribe on YouTube. I was going too fast. And wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.